Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician, Danny Whitson. I hope, my Abracadamits, hope you guys had a great weekend. I'm just coming back from Sparta, Tennessee. I had a fantastic show at Happy Trails Brewery. Big shout-out to all the people who came out in Sparta. There's some really fine people in Sparta. And we had a safe and fun time. So that was definitely a lot of fun. Actually, I signed some autographs after the show. And to me, I can never get used to that. I don't know what it is. I'm just not good. First of all, my handwriting is complete garbage. But I never know what to say when I sign an autograph. I got to come up with something better than like, "Hi, Danny Whitson." I don't know. I got to come up with something more clever, I think. So, but yeah, it's flattering, but at the same time, I feel ridiculous when I sign autographs. So if you got any ideas, shoot me some ideas of some stuff I could say, because I have no clue what to say. But let's get right into the sponsors for this episode of the Abracadam Podcast. Now, I don't know about you, but I hate doing laundry. I can't stand it. No, I got better things to do in life than to fold my socks. So let Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Service do that for you. Do your complete wash in only 4 minutes. 2 minutes to drop it off and 2 minutes to pick it up. Drop off your laundry and go live your life, baby. Go find something fun to do. Go see a movie. Go catch butterflies. Go paint trees. Whatever it is you like to do, go do it, come back, and your laundry will be clean, folded, and ready to go. Also, if you're traveling to the Knoxville area or Anderson County area and you need somewhere to do your laundry, Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold will take care of you. Definitely check them out at 122 Randolph Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and give them a call at 865-951-3237. And give our Facebook page a like at Bob's Washboard. Another thing we all need to think about is, what would you do if your car broke down? You'd be stuck. Yeah. Who would you call? I mean, that's a big fear of mine. What would I do? I'm no mechanic. I'll be honest with you. I don't know anything about cars. I don't. But that's okay. Because if you do break down, let Will's Towing take care of you. That's right. Will Roberts at Will's Towing. Professional service, fast and safe. Will's Towing. Anytime your car breaks down, any trouble, don't hesitate to call Will at 865-272-5300, located at 2081 Oak Ridge Turnpike, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Let Will's Towing be your first choice for any of your towing services. Okay. Also, a little FYI I need to mention, if you do have a Danny Whitson autograph, I don't think it's going to be worth a whole lot of money. I don't mean to break your heart or anything, but it probably will serve a purpose, so maybe hold on to it, and who knows? You might need a good place to put your chewed up chewing gum one day. There you go. You're welcome. Guys, I'm super excited about today's guest on the Abracadam Podcast, and I know I say that all the time, but this guy is somebody who has influenced my magic a great deal, especially my close-up stuff. I'll never forget the first time seeing this magician perform. He fooled me so bad. And as a magician, you don't get fooled a lot. So when it happens, it's a big deal. This guy is definitely where I like to go when I want to get fooled. Because, yeah, he fools me to this day. He'll do something, and he's just so creative. He's definitely a master magician. So please sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with the master magician, the magic champion, Sean Farquhar. All right, we're here today with Sean Farquhar. How you doing, Sean?
If I were any better, I'd be twins. Thanks for asking, Danny.
Awesome, man. I'm excited to have you on the podcast.
I'm excited to be here.
definitely one of my favorite magicians. Now, if you don't mind, do you care to kind of introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure. My name is Sean Farquhar. I like long walks on the beach. I'm Sean Farquhar, two-time world champion of magic, chief cook and bottle washer, past president of the International Brotherhood of Magicians and the Pacific Coast Association of Magicians, performing magician who spent the last 40 years, about 258 days a year, somewhere on the road doing magic. I fooled Penn and Teller a couple times on their TV show, Fool Us, been on Ellen, and my mom likes me a lot.
Now, okay, you mentioned how you did fool Penn and Teller a couple times, and I believe everyone else watching that episode, there's a long list of everything you do that fools me. And, you know, I've been doing magic for close to 20 years, but you are the magician's magician. Actually, truly you are. Let me ask, Sean, how did it start with you? What got you into magic? We all got our origin story. Magicians are like comic book heroes. What was your origin story, though?
I was born in a cave in Endor with magical power. No, okay. I was born into a family of magicians. My father was a magician. My grandfather, my great-grandfather. I'm like the fourth generation without a real job. When I was young, my dad taught me little things with coins and stuff, but I was kind of like the secondary. I had an older brother, Scott, and my dad was teaching him to be a magician. And so I kind of learned by osmosis, watching my older brother learning the tricks, and my dad would teach him and then teach me a couple of cool little pranky things to do. But I kept studying what my brother was learning. And then it reached a point where my brother had no interest in magic, at which point I raised my hand and said, pick me. And my dad continued on my teaching and then introduced me to more magicians. I had the opportunity to perform with friends, Wolf Lucky and Greg Fielding, at my high school, my junior high, I should say, and then into high school. And then I met a guy named Boots Frame, who was a traveling professional magician who'd retired. And he took me under his wing and mentored me. And from there, I had so many mentors that my magic progressed rapidly from people like Mandrake the Magician and Carl Hemian. And they're real people who I think saw the potential that their legacy could live through other people. People like Tony Yang and John Gilliland shared their ideas with me, and they're all gone. And you don't know most of those names, but to me, they were legends. And so my magic started with just a regular, you know, magic kits that my dad bought me. He taught me more sleights than tricks. In the beginning, I didn't even know they were tricks. It was like how to move a coin from one place to the other. And then later he said, combine those two things together. And I went, oh, look at that. That's a trick. He's like, yep. And by learning those basics, it made it easy when it came time to learn a trick. When I said, well, how do you do that? My dad said, well, how would you do it? I said, well, I guess I would do this with that combined with that. And he goes, uh-huh, now do it. And I do it, go, oh, wow, that actually works.
That is, first of all, that is so interesting that you came from a family of magicians, you know, and you said your grandfather and your dad?
Yeah, my great-grandfather.
Wow. This... Sean, that could be a television show. I would watch that. That's awesome.
It's funny. As I was raising my daughter, she's now 20. She was in the show when she was young. I used to say, this is the fifth generation, but she can do anything she wants to as long as she's a magician. And then I'd say, no, I'm just kidding. She can do anything. She can do card magic, coin magic, bird magic, illusion.
You know what's so crazy is, like, okay, I have a 21-year-old son and I've got a 11-year-old daughter. Neither of them are really interested in magic at all. So, but I do have my fingers crossed that one day I will get a grandchild and I can teach them all my shenanigans. You know what I mean?
Now, see, the grandchild, never thought of that. I just think that one day my daughter is at the University of Victoria studying theater. And she's an amazing actress and super talented, sensitive person who really sees the world around her in different ways than I do. I think that there'll be a time where she'll want to embrace magic again. When her friends think I'm the coolest thing ever, which is really flattering, but it also drives her nuts that it's like people come over, wow, your dad's Sean Farquhar. And I'm like, she's like, yeah, it's been that way ever since I was born. Just, I think, you know, annoys her. But I think there might be a time later in life when I'm old and feeble where she'll go, gee, I wish I could do a trick or two, which she used to do. She used to be able to, I used to make my daughter come out of a toy box. I would show an empty toy box, make my daughter appear, and I'd say, this is my first production, which got a pretty good laugh. But my wife would look at me and go, your first production? And I said, well, I had a part in it. And my wife would go, yeah, a small part. And everybody would laugh. And I would say to Hannah, I say, well, Hannah, you want to tell a joke, sing a song, or do a magic trick? And by doing that, it was always different every night. And we were doing a lot of shows. And she would pick whatever. And a lot of times she'd pick a magic trick and she'd do this little magic trick, which was cute. And then we put a microphone in her dress one night. And I said, now you have your own microphone. So you don't have to sit on my knee to talk. You can just stand up and talk. Okay. I said, well, that night I said, Hannah, you want to sing a song, tell a joke, or do a magic trick? And she looked at me, looked down at her microphone and her dress. And she said, I think I'll do all three. And then just walked forward, leaving me in the dark and took over the show. And there's no way you can stop a five-year-old from performing because you're a jerk at that point. And you just said she did her knock-knock joke. She did her I'm a little teapot. She did her magic trick. And I just sat quietly in the dark and waited. When it was over, and she said, I'm good, and started to walk off, I came back into the spotlight, stuck my head in, and said, hi, do you remember me? I'm Hannah's dad. It was like...
You know, but that had to have been like an awesome, proud moment to see your daughter doing that.
It was. To see 1,200 people doing the knock-knock joke with my daughter is just brilliant. But to see her take over the entire stage and just become herself was really stunning. And then to watch her progression as she went into dance and musical theater, and to see her how, you know, she can command a stage from a cast of 30 people was really, yeah, really inspiring. Yeah, I admire her greatly, and I know she has a huge future. It's funny, the auditorium at the University of Victoria is named the Farquhar Auditorium.
Oh, is it really? So named after your family?
My family, yeah.
That is super cool. Awesome. Well, let me ask you, I mean, there's so much interesting things I could ask about growing up in a house full of magic like that. It's almost got that... It's almost got that Osborne's feel, you know what I mean? Like, this is a real life, you know, magic family. So maybe we need to pitch that to Netflix or something, Sean. Something.
I think one was pitched a few years ago. It had Carl Ballantyne was the ghost of the grandfather magician, and Ed Alonzo, and there was one other people. It was a family with the gross ghost grandfather and the young studying one and the current professional one. So I think it's already been pitched as a show. But the idea is, yeah, pretty cool.
Well, it's cool that it's actually your life. So even better. Now, well, let me ask you this. Okay. So I know, you know, how much you do eat, breathe, and drink magic, you know, but do you have any other passions out there besides magic?
I have a lot of things I like to do. I wouldn't call them passions, though, but I have a lot of interests, but all of them lead to magic. Like I like to wood build. I've got a large carpentry shop, but it's all to build magic props or to work on my theater. I've got a theater called Hidden Wonders. And so I really love construction and building and framing and developing. So I do all that. I've got a couple of lasers. So I really love working on laser stuff, but all the programming that goes into it through Adobe Illustrator, I had to learn that whole program in Photoshop. But that was all to be able to use the laser to make more magic stuff. The computer is an awesome thing because there's so many software programs, development, video editing. I love editing. I use Final Cut Pro and think it's a lot of fun to understand it, but it's to do magic. Yeah, I love videography. I have a whole television studio and it's all to do magic. I eat, sleep, drink magic.
Okay, well, so everything is pretty much, you know, I have found, you know, I think that's something that I know I need to work better on is, you know, especially like what this year has taught us anything is I've had to learn like Ecamm and stuff like this for virtual shows to be able to adapt to, you know, what's going on. And it's, at first I was just like, I don't want to learn this. I just want to get on stage again. I just want to, you know, but it's crazy how you kind of have to learn these things.
I feel your pain. I learned Ecamm, Manycam, OBS. I bought myself a Blackmagic ATEM. I learned how to do Zoom and how to put it together, StreamYard. I'm a voracious learner. I just love to learn, but I want to apply it. I just don't want to learn book smart and not be able to use it. So things like this, totally cool with. If you asked me to sit down and, you know, study the theory of relativity, it'd be like, why? I get the basics. I don't need any more. That's what's great about magic. Magic's tactile. So when I've got, I don't know, between periodicals, lecture notes, and books, probably 10,000 publications. And I'll never read them all, but I read one or two every day and I'm voracious on that because it's tactile. When I see something's great, ooh, pull out the deck of cards or grab a ball and a handkerchief and give it a try. And I really love that. So, and learning about OBS and Ecamm, Manycam, Zoom, all this was necessary because I have a small little theater that seats 30 people that's closed, but I'm still paying a lease every month and I have staff and I'm still paying them because they just because I'm closed doesn't mean they shouldn't be able to afford to, you know, to live. So I've had to find a way. So I went, we're going virtual. What? I'm going to do virtual corporates. I'm going to pitch myself. I'm going to do public shows. We're going to figure it out. And we have, and been very successful at it, enjoying it. I can't say they've all been great. There was a learning curve, but we've gotten to the point where it's actually fun, and I'm enjoying it. Got another two coming up end of the month that I'm very excited about because it's like, oh, I have some more ideas to throw into the show. The show's a choose-your-own-adventure. So the audience has a cabinet full of things to pick through or a box or stuff from them. And so I wanted to add more in all those categories. And I have. So no two shows have been the same since I opened the doors last September. So it's really fun. Well, because that it's sounds, an adventure, they pick.
That sounds awesome. So this is it's a magic show that they get to choose their own adventure.
Yeah. I call it Hidden Wonders Speakeasy Magic Experience. So I rented a storefront and the front is a store. I put a bunch of crap in it. But when you look at the crap closer, you'll realize all the curiosity items are magic related. Like there's a comic book rack, but when you look closer, you'll see that they're Mr. Miracle and Xanthera and Mandrake comic books are all through it, Ravine comic books. So when you look, you go, oh, that's all comic. And then there's all these clocks on the wall. But when you start looking at the faces, the logo faces are like the IBM and the SAM and the Pacific Coast Association magician crests. And the toys are all toys like old magic kits and things like that. And the photographs and the black and whites are old magicians. And so when they go through the curiosity shop, they're actually being primed for going into my little jewel box theater. To find it, they're given a doorknob and then they go try to find a door and it's a wall and the doorknob sticks to a wall and then the door automatically opens on its own and you enter this beautiful burgundy and black hardwood floored, absolutely gorgeous little jewel box of a theater. And I have a cabinet that's filled with weird things, a box filled with items that I've done since I've started my career and some brand new ones that I've never performed. And then I also offer them the opportunity to say, do something from me. And so when the audience is there live, they can hand me their phone or their wristwatch or a bill out of their pocket, or I've had car keys given to me and I'll do magic with them. And if they pick the box, I'll decide if the audience is ready to see something that is new that I've never done that I might be a little nervous or thrown off about, or if I'm giving them something I've done since I was 5 years of age. And then the cabinet has multiple shelves where they see the stuff. And on each shelf are multiple items. And so they pick something on that shelf. Everything else on that shelf is dead for the night. That way there's a variety. And I've set it up so that some shelves are comedy and some shelves are mentalism and some shelves are danger. That way they get a mix of things if they pick from the cabinet. They don't just get danger, 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 or mentalism, mentalism. They get a variety no matter what. And I only know the opening and the closing of the show. Everything in between is their own. Which makes it exciting as an artist because.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's easy to get bored. Sometimes it's easy to get bored doing that same show, the same stuff. So, that is, first of all, that's a way to keep you excited and keep you on your toes. Now, but this was something that you were doing before COVID, or was this something that you came up with during the pandemic?
So, I started before, but just before. For the last 7 years, I worked for Disney Cruise Lines, and I was touring, and I always wanted to settle down. And so last September, I decided that of 2019, I said I would not renew my contract. And I rented a pop-up space, just a small storefront in a historic Chinatown in Vancouver. And it was like 700 square feet. And I made a small tailor shop in the front. And you went through a change room door to get into the back. And I thought, we'll open for a month and we'll see what the numbers are like. We'll do like Friday and Saturday, a show at like 7 o'clock. And they sold out really quickly. So we added a 9 o'clock show. Then we added a Thursday night show. Then a Wednesday night show. Then we added a Saturday matinee. Then a Sunday matinee and a Sunday evening show. We're doing 7 shows a week, sold out. And we were through September, October, into November. I couldn't have the space in December because it had already been rented. So we had to pack everything out, break it all down, store it all away in my garages. Then we opened up again in January. And we were January, February. We were sold out well into April. But in March, we closed the doors because of COVID. And then I lost the building because the person that owned it that I was renting from, because I wasn't renting and they didn't have a lot of money, they just lost it. I tried to get the lease direct with the person that owned it, but they were having trouble making their payments. And I was afraid the whole building would just disappear. So we went and looked for a new place. So in amidst a pandemic, in the end of June, my wife and I signed a lease on the 1st of July to lease a building for 3 years. And the guy looked at me like I was a three-headed alien going, "You're opening a business in a pandemic." Well, his words were, "In the middle of a pandemic." I said, "I prefer not to think of this as the middle, because that means there's just as much on the other end. I prefer the word in the midst of a pandemic, because that means the end is coming." And we were open for August and September and October. And then we had to close the doors in November. In Canada, our health orders came in. We were closed for all of November, all of December. We've been closed all of January. And the next, if they renew the orders, will be on February 5th, which could be another 30 days we're closed, which means I've been open 30% of the time that I've owned the building.
But, okay, the thing that impresses me is the one of the real secrets in show business is selling out them shows. That's impressive. That impresses me because, you know, I perform live events for the public. I know how difficult it can be, especially to sell the shows out.
Yeah, putting bums in seats is the hardest part. And it was going to be my fear when I opened my own theater. It was like, would people actually want to come and see me? Or are they happy just seeing magic? Or do they even care about magic? But I think I get a lot of repeats because the show is never the same. And people go, "I wanted the other thing on that cabinet shelf and they didn't pick it." And that really annoys me. And I go, "Oh yeah, you missed a good one." So, and when people come back, they don't come back just by themselves. They bring friends.
God, that's brilliant.
One lady, Jessie, she's been to see the show 5 times live and twice virtually. There's a fellow, Zeb, I think he's seen the show, I think now four virtuals. And he goes, "Everyone's different." I said, that's the point. For me, it's great because I have to stay connected in the show from the start to the end. And the audience has to stay connected to know where we're going, because you could be the next person called upon. So you have to know what we've seen, and they're picking the flow of it. So it's a collaborative artistic effort.
See, this is what gets me about you, Sean. This is making me excited. Unfortunately, I don't get excited about magic shows normally as much as, you know, as I used to. And now this right here is something that I'm like, you know what? I might buy a ticket to see this. You know, this sounds awesome. This sounds interesting.
I love it. As a performer, you'll appreciate, think about this. You have tricks that you call closers, and you have middlers, and you have openers, and you have ones that kind of just sit there, and ones that are they freak them out, and ones that just puzzle them. Now imagine you have a show and by chance, the tricks they pick are all closers. That would be horrible, right? Because it's just like hitting a person in the head repeatedly. Yeah. Or maybe they just pick all middlers and there's nothing strong. Or maybe they pick the strong trick at the start of the show. So now you have to change your performance style to match where it is in the show. So I do some tricks that, you know, just seem like a slap in the side of the head. And if I opened with them and I just slap you in the head, the rest of the show is going to look weak and terrible. So I make the artistic choice to make that trick weaker, hoping that they pick something stronger. And if they don't, I then have to find an artistic way to make that weak trick seem stronger.
Oh, man, that sounds so fun.
It really is. I've had them pick my favorite three tricks right off the top and gone, oh, we got nowhere to go but down, but then made it so that it actually went up.
That's okay. Well, I tell you what, since we're talking about favorite tricks, now, for the listeners, I want to let you know, Sean Farquhar, I said he is a magician's magician. Sean fools my brains out every time I see him do something. But I tell every, when I'm having a conversation with a magician and we bring up other magicians, your name comes up, I always tell them the story of your cups and balls routine. And I will never forget being in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, watching you perform the cups and balls. I had no clue who you were. And I was kind of young in magic. I remember you coming out with the cups and you did this little flourish that we all learn in the beginning of learning cups and balls. And, you know, inside I kind of rolled my eyes a little. I was like, gosh, this guy better be better than this, you know. And you proceed with the routine, and it's amazing. Baseballs are appearing here and there, but then you really, really fooled everyone when those cups turn out to be big chunks of metal. And I'll never forget thinking so hard about it. And I thought on the way home, I was like, I got it. I know how he did it. He had those the whole time. Wait, that stupid cup flourish. Sean Farquhar is a genius. I'm
saying that.
Well, I mean, it was a magic lesson for me right then, because it watching you do that trick made me look at my magic differently and think, how can I set up ahead of time so far like you did? Like you had that door, you knew people were going to run to that door, especially magicians, and you already had it padlocked, baby. I mean,
I think all my favorite magicians are the people that think back to go, how do you retrace the magic and what do you need to put in? I love when someone will do a magic trick and they'll say something like, or they'll do a move and you go, well, that was kind of superfluous. You don't really need that. And then later you go, oh my God, that was really necessary, because that's where I was going until the moment I go back in my head and go, that foolish move that wasn't necessary was really a paramount pivoting moment to make sure that they didn't go in that direction for the ending. I remember doing the cups and balls when I qualified for the world championships. And I have to qualify through the Canadian Association of Magicians, then the International Brotherhood of Magicians. So I was doing the routine and the president of the Canadian Association of Magicians was sitting in the audience. And as I began the routine, it's very Di Vernon-esque. You've got all the standard moves, the cup through cup and the tip the cups and put the balls underneath. And it's just very typical looking. And the cups I made, I designed them so they look typical. They're not fancy and engraved. They were just a very standard looking cup. But I wanted that so that everything looked standard, so that the ending could be very unstandard. But as I was performing, I saw the president basically cross their arms and lower their head like, oh, this was our big hope. And now I'm disappointed kind of thing. And I was like, oh, don't give up on me yet. But I kept performing. And when it got to the point where the cups were revealed to be just solid blocks of steel, I remember the president sitting straight up and nudging the person, going, that's our guy. That's our guy up there. And I was like, that's exactly what I wanted. Same thing happened when I competed at FISM. I could see I was losing the interest of some of the judges because they're expecting a certain level at FISM. And yes, it was a proficient, solid routine, but it's just that, or it appears to be. And so you start losing them and they've already begun to make their tabulations going, okay, I know where this is going. And then all of a sudden it was like slap to the side of the head and you saw them all go, what? And consult with each other, like, and then start changing scores. And I'm like, and we're going to, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, that's what I expect out of your magic, Sean, is the slap upside the head. I know it's coming. Where is it at? Because I'm now I'm expecting it. You know, I had seen you do the routine, the card routine, where I think the card winds up inside of the unopened deck of cards. Oh. You did that on Penn and Teller, didn't you, I believe?
I certainly did. And on Ellen as well.
Well, when I saw you do that on Penn and Teller, I thought, oh yeah, he's got this, because I gave up, you know, I have no clue. So yeah, that was that smack upside the head.
One of my favorite moments with that was filmed in London, England. When they filmed the first season, it was done in London at Wembley Studios. And the magic judge was Johnny Thompson, awesome. Which is the reason I agreed to do it, because I wanted to hang out with Johnny Thompson. And I'd never explained the routine to anybody. I'd already won FISM, the world championship. I won IBM and SAM. I won the Ron McMillan trophy, Kevin Ray trophy, lots of trophies with it. But I'd never told anybody how it worked. And one of the prerequisites of Foolish is you have to explain it to the magic judge. And I really wanted to tell somebody, and nobody better than Johnny Thompson. And so I got in a room with Johnny and I went through the whole thing and I explained the psychology and the mechanics behind it. And he was just grinning the whole time. And he looks at me and says, "That is good. You're going to fool the boys," which he referred to them. He said, "Oh, you're going to fool the boys." I was like, "Really?" He said, "Oh yeah, you just relax. You're going to fool the boys." And about a half an hour later, I'm sitting in the green room, chilling with a guy I'd never heard of before. His name was Daniel Madison. Now he's somebody big, but at the time, nobody knew who he was. Daniel and I were sitting in this green room with several other people watching bad British comedies. And Johnny Thompson comes in and says, "I need to talk to you," and points at me. And I was like, "Oh, what?" He goes, "If you could come with me." So we leave, we go across the hallway in another room. He says, "I need you to run me through the routine again. I'm still kind of fooled on two parts." I was like, "Yes."
Oh, just, man.
Just made my day. And he goes, and when I told him what I was going to do, he says, "You're really going to try that on television, on Penn?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Gotta see this." So when I danced my little dance, it was absolute joy that because I never dreamed that I'd ever fool Penn and Teller. It was never my purpose to fool Penn and Teller. I didn't go on the show because of the foolish part. I went on to be hanging with Johnny Thompson.
Yeah.
And to meet Penn and Teller.
Well, you know, I knew when I saw, I was like, yeah, I know what he's doing, and he's going to fool him. He is going to fool him. I knew it. Well, let me ask you this, because you are a creator. You create magic for magicians, and you also perform for lay people. And you're a good entertainer, which doesn't always happen in magic. Sometimes you've got magicians that are better, you know, thinkers and creators, and, you know, not, they don't perform so much, but you do both and you're good at both. Which one do you like to do better?
I love to perform. I was born to be an entertainer. God gave me a gift to be entertaining. If I didn't do magic, I'd find some other way to make people smile and feel loved. First and foremost, I'm an entertainer. My whole life is magic. I eat, sleep, and drink it. But I love to create, because I want to create magic that I like, because I see a lot of magic out there created by people who don't like people or don't know how to entertain people. And their magic isn't entertaining. It's designed to go, "Here's something that'll fool another magician and have some fun." I'm like, I don't want that. So I was forced to create. I never thought of myself as a creator. I just made stuff because I needed it. And I found ways that worked for me. And then when I realized that what I created for me could actually work for other people, it was just a bonus. I did the second time I was on Penn and Teller's Foolish, I did a book test and I created that. And then since then, I know two performers who've used them on the Got Talent series and made it to the finals, literally like placed second, both doing it. And both of them did it in completely different styles than what I did it. And theirs were different from each other, which as a creator makes my heart soar to see that people can find different ways to present your magic using the same method, but with their own presentations.
Now, I have a material on my show that is completely original with me. A lot of magic tricks that, you know, I do in my show, and they're my babies. I love them, you know. And I've played around with the idea about, you know, releasing it to on the market to sell to magicians. But when I think about it for a minute, and I'm like, nope, I just can't do it. Do you have anything out there that which one of them you had a real hard time of letting go of?
There's a few I still haven't let go. I can tell you, Torn to Pieces, it took a long time. It was not my first release. My first release was Tagged, and then my second one was Torn to Pieces. And there was a long time between the two of them. Tag was fun to release. The person who convinced me to do it was really great. And it was my, oh, look, people know who I am, which was neat. And they came up with some cool ideas. Then Torn to Pieces, I was kind of reluctant at first, but when I released it and I saw how many magicians did it and how much it grew and how, as I taught it to other people, I had more ideas. And then they had thoughts on it going, have you thought? No, I never thought. So I love that process. There's a few that I've kept just because I'm disheartened, not by the performances of them, not by the people who are doing it, but by the people who steal it. The torrenting drives me insane. I understand there's one fellow, he runs a company. He always says, Sean, the people who are stealing it, we're never going to buy from you. So you're not losing any money. And I try to explain, it's not about money. The money has nothing to do with it. I make more money from a single corporate show than I've ever made from any one of the releases I've done. No matter how big the release is, I can still point to at least one corporate show where I made more money. Money was never my goal when I released magic to the community. It was to release magic to the community, to allow my ideas to flourish, to grow, and to share. And so when people steal the idea, it just it really disheartens me. And so recently, you haven't seen much new release from me because I've just reached the point I don't like the idea that it's just going to be taken. I even went so far, I created an effect called the HG effect. It's my any card at any number with a borrowed shuffled deck of cards. And when I released it, it was easily a $30 download. And I released it for 10 bucks because I thought at $10, no one's going to steal a $10 download. But I've seen it out there for $1.99 on websites from all, I would say China, but no, the two biggest ones are both in the United States, run by GoDaddy. And it drives me insane that it's like, wait a second. People that are always, you know, we're always going, oh, it's that terrible place in India or that terrible place in China. No, we got the terrible places right here in North America too. It's really disheartening as a creator to see people that disrespect and take it. So it's not so much me wanting to release the trick that makes it tough. It's the dissemination of the information afterwards. I'm about to release my cups and balls, my block and ball.
Oh man.
I'm going to release 100 sets of them. They're being machined right now. And I have to do it in a special way so that those people get to keep the secret among the 100 of them. So it's all going to include private lessons. Each of them are going to get lessons. There will be no, you know, produced video that can be torrented and shared. There will be some instructions, but they're going to be printed blue on blue, so they're hard to photocopy. Everything is going to be to keep the secret secret. I'm all for sharing secrets, the ones I want to share. And the ones I don't, I'd prefer that I got to keep them. I've never released, you know, an instructional video on Shape of My Heart. I've never released one on the signed card and sealed deck, although that I've promised the community I will release, and I will, just as soon as I know of a way that's safe to do it.
You know, I've thought about this, and I've wondered if, I mean, let's be completely honest, okay? Because magicians don't normally talk about this, but it's one of the problems magic faces in an age that is based around information. And we're talking about, you know, our craft, whether we like it or not, but it's wrapped up in secrecy. So I've always wondered, how is magic going to continue to survive and teach other students without being stolen or ripped off, or kind of like what you're dealing? Do you think magicians are going to just stop sharing their stuff through the internet, and maybe it'll go back to you have to know a magician and go, you know, like back in the old days to learn?
No, I don't think we're going to stop sharing through the internet just because it's a really effective way of sharing. I think that we're going to find that there's always going to be a group of magicians who share for ego, share out of that sheer rebelliousness. But I think that will change the way we share on the internet. I've just recently saw a group, three guys who have a project where it's like $110 and you join them for the day and they share the information over Zoom, and nothing of it is recorded. You write your notes the way I did when I was a kid. You write your notes, you ask your questions, and then you go off and you study. I think that's great. I started a series during quarantine just to test, and it's working well. I started a thing called Sessions with Sean, and I charged $30, nothing, $30. And I say, come spend some time with me and I will teach you. And then I listed some things I would teach, which included my infamous vanishing bottles that you see on YouTube.
Oh my God. That is
my coin in bottle and the lock in bottle and all the little video things that I've created, like the transparent Omni card, all the things that I created during quarantine. I put them all into the Sessions with Sean, which was me, and I limited it to 25 people. I said, 25 people will join me in a Zoom room and I will teach it all to you. And then I sent them a list of the things they needed to scrounge up and gather. And then we practiced all together. The session went, the first one went 5.5 hours for their $30. And the second one was just a little over five. And I've done a third one and it was just a little over 5 hours. So it's like $6 an hour to have time with me to learn. And everybody came out of there saying that the first hour was their $30 and the rest was just bonus time, which is a really nice compliment. But to me, the compliment was, I've seen several of those performers doing my effects now in their Zoom shows. They popped up on their YouTube channels. They popped up in their Instagram stories. And I'm just smiling going, I effectively taught them. I actually got to see them learning. I've corrected the mistakes while they were with me. And I became their friend. So they're less likely to share the secret and go, look how clever I am, as opposed to look how honored I am to have a secret shared with me that I'm not willing to just give up for a like or a hit.
That is brilliant. First of all, man, that is super awesome. And I couldn't imagine, I mean, it would be such a gem to, I mean, for 1 hour, but 5 hours for $30, that is amazing. Now, Leslie, let me back up too, because I forgot about that. Clearly, it was clearly impossible, correct? What, is that what it's called? I'm trying to remember. Like the Omni deck.
Omni deck, I call it the ultimate invisible deck.
That's what, okay, I purchased that from you. And gosh, it just blows me away how much of your magic that I actually is in my repertoire that I do. So cool.
Well, the Omni deck or the ultimate invisible deck was the creation of Jerry Andrus with the help of Danny Corum. And I bought a company called Palmer Magic and I had it. Recently, because I have the laser, I added etching the Queen of Hearts and the Ace of Spades into the blocks. So you can have a person select a card like the Queen of Hearts and then have the whole deck disappear in their hands. And when they open their hands, their Queen of Hearts is etched into the block. It just blows people's minds. It's very
all right. Cool. Well, now you just took my money. Okay. Sean's brilliant, by the way. He's a brilliant salesperson. Okay. Well, also I got to back up too. I want to mention this is we mentioned Tagged. You mentioned Tagged. I want to let you, okay, I do a lot of stand-up comedy magic. And one of the first tricks I did on stage at the open mic at the comedy club, I remember showing up as the magician and doing Tagged.
Sweet.
And it was brilliant. And, you know, some of these things are just now coming back to me that I'm like, man, Sean has really had an impact on my career with his magic. And yeah, with the Omni deck, that's a go-to. Any walk around strolling gig to this day that I do, I will do the Omni deck.
I'm happy to hear that. When you add my little deck switch to it, it can just be mind blowing. I was in London, England, having lunch in a pub with my wife and my daughter, and a young man in a waistcoat came over and said, would you like to see some conjuring? And I was like, pardon me? He goes, conjuring? Oh, magic? And I went, oh, yes, please. And he proceeded to do an ambitious card routine, which was very nice. And then he asked me to hold out my hand and put the cards in my hand, put my other hand on top. And it was at that very moment I realized that the bugger had done my deck switch on me and that I had an Omni deck in my hands. And he had no idea who I was. And I'm sitting there and he said, if I can make that deck of cards disappear, would you be impressed? I looked at him and said, if it turns into a block of glass, I'd build a church on the spot in your name. And his face was slowly contorted. He went, oh, bloody hell, you're Sean Farquhar. And I was like, yay.
That is awesome. Now, first of all, also your deck switch, by the way, I do know it. And I learned it from you.
Awesome.
And it is the thing I love about it, I mean, I don't want to go too deep into magic jargon because, you know, our sure. listeners are going to be like, what's going on here? But the thing I love about it is you don't have to be seated. You don't have to be, you know, it's real life. It works perfect for me on stage if I have to switch, you know, it's just one of those things for any stage worker.
Just about anything. Walk around stage. Anywhere you want to. You don't have to have a table. You don't have to have other props. I guess I don't like the word real world anymore because video is the real world too now. It's practical. It's practical. That's it. Because I could do it while doing a Zoom show. I could easily be standing up and do it in a Zoom show.
And it's one of those things too that you're like, it's crazy that more people haven't thought of this.
Yeah. That's always the thing with the best magic is that the second somebody shows you, you go say, oh, come on. That had to have been made up like at least 100 times by now. I'm not that clever. And then you go, oh, no, apparently just nobody ever thought about it or wrote it down if they did come up with it.
Well, I tell you what, Sean. Okay. So here on the Abracadam podcast, we got to ask some tough questions. Okay.
Sure.
We got to ask the tough questions. So we're going to get a little political. Dum, awesome. Dum, dum. Yes. Now, I got a tough political question I want to throw at you here. Let's see. Now, you're Canadian.
Eh?
Hey, there we go. So, you know, and by the way, before I get into this, I just realized how little I know about Canada politics, Canadian politics.
I am surprised by how our neighbors don't know anything about Canada politics. I had a test in a pub with a guy, and I said, I bet I can name more American presidents than you can name Canadian presidents. And he said, yeah, I bet so. I said, I already win. He goes, what? I said, we don't have any presidents in Canada. And he goes, oh, okay.
It's prime minister, right?
That's right. It's very good.
I think you guys, from what I've heard, you guys got a pretty cool one right now, right?
Yeah, he's pretty awesome. A percentage of the country really despise him, but I like him. And I didn't actually vote for him, but I really like him. He's turned out to be a really good guy.
Well, now let me ask you this, though, on you. Okay, here it is. And this is a special day, too, by the way, right now.
Yeah.
It is. If you could share a plate of nachos with any U.S. president, alive or dead, who would it be?
You know, that's a really good question. It would be between Kennedy and Obama. And Kennedy, because I'd hope he'd bring Marilyn Monroe. So I'm going to go with Obama because the guy is hip and cool, and I don't want to have plate of nachos with a dead man. But I think it'd be Obama because he just seems so approachable. He's, I think, the only president in my lifetime that seems like a person I could actually walk up to and feel comfortable having a conversation with. He can be stately when he wanted to be. He can be powerful when he wanted to be, but he can be just down to earth. The day I saw him, and it was just recently, like maybe 4 or 5 months ago, he was left a speech and walked through a gym with his Secret Service to go out a back door. And as he walked through the gym, there was a person playing basketball, and he snuck the ball from the guy and then tossed it and made the hoop. And it just went, that's what I'm talking about, and walked out the door. And I was like, oh, that guy's just all around cool. If I was going to have a plate of nachos, it'd probably be with Obama just because of his cool factor. It might actually rub off on me.
Well, I think that's a good choice. I do. Cause he does have a real person, you know, look on his face, you know, it's somebody just how he carries himself. A lot of the guys, you know, especially politicians in general, you know, they don't have that.
Most of them seem above you, right? I mean, most people that hold an office in anything. I did the same thing when I was president of the IBM. All the presidents before were very stately and very presidential. And I ended everything with the word prez, hashtag PREZ or Z, because I just didn't feel presidential. And to this day, some people still think I'm the president of the IBM because they went, wow, you were a face that was, I wanted to make it, I think the word's approachable. I wanted to be more approachable. I wanted to, you get voted in by the people. you should at least be approachable to the people.
Well, that's one thing you definitely are.
Yeah.
That's one thing you definitely are. You are approachable. I think to me, when I see a good entertainer right off the bat, and I'm like, you know, if that person doesn't have an approachable feel to them, I don't think they're good at, you know, especially entertaining people. You can't, you know.
Yeah. There are some where you look like there's a guy, Marco Carvo. He's a dove magician from Finland. And he is this staunch. His magic is brilliant. But to walk up to him, I feel really odd because his character, Lance Burton, when he first started, his character was unapproachable. That bird act was an unapproachable character. And then when I saw him at the Hacienda and he stopped and, you know, produced six girls out of a suitcase and said, "Granddaddy always said, travel with a six pack." I went, "Oh my God, this could be my best friend." It was like his character changed. And you can change. You can be two things in one event. Just as in, like I say, with Obama, it can be very stately and at the same time could shoot hoops. A big plate of nachos and as much time as possible.
Well, and the other thing though, I wonder if Obama would be a nacho hog. What kind of etiquette does he have with nachos?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he'd be the two hands in. Yeah, pretty sure. But I'm a nacho hog, so he'd have a hard time.
That's how, you know, I can't stand to share nachos with my wife or anyone. I want them all for me. So
my wife will bring the plate in for movie night. She plunks it down. I just look and I said, "Where's yours?"
Well, I tell you what, Sean, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast, man. This has been awesome. Do you care to maybe let people know where they could see the show virtual and also the session or your website?
Yeah. Anything? Sure. You can find me on social media on Facebook at Sean Farquhar. I have two accounts. So one is a fan, one is my personal, but both have basically the same information. You can follow me on either one of those, on Instagram at Magic Champion, Twitter at Magic Champion. Those are both with one C, by the way, MagicChampion. I couldn't afford both C's. You pay by the letter, right? Yeah. They got the Hidden Wonders virtual shows. You can find those under eventbrite.ca. Eventbrite's a big ticket company here in Canada, Eventbrite, B-R-I-T-E. You can find me. You can go to hiddenwonders.show, hiddenwonders.show, and see all about my theater. You can see pictures of it and everything and find out. I should put the link for the virtual show on there. I bet it's not even there. I'm a terrible businessman. I just love to do magic tricks. That's all I want to do. Yeah, you can go to palmermagic.com and see my magic tricks. I got a lot of stuff on the internet. I just realized that as I'm telling you that. Just go to Facebook. You'll find everything there. It's the link to the whole world, right?
Well, Sean, this was awesome. And, you know, I'm a fan. I'm a fanboy here of Sean Farquhar, everyone. So he is a magician's magician. He is a master. Thank you for coming on the Abracadam podcast.
Thanks for the kind words, Danny. Thanks for having me.
Man, that was so much fun. Guys, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Sean Farquhar. And for you non-magicians out there, I know there was some magic jargon, some magic topics going around. But I guess that's kind of what you do whenever two magicians get together. We geek out a little bit, especially with somebody like Sean, who's just full of so much really cool magic trick knowledge. Guys, thank you for subscribing and following to the Abracadam podcast. Please keep spreading the word. Tell people to give us a follow. We're on Spotify, iHeart. We're pretty much everywhere you listen to podcasts. So please check us out, follow, subscribe. Also, if you get a chance, give us a review. Reviews do a lot for podcasts. So please, if you don't mind, you know, give us a review. Give the Abracadam podcast a review. I am excited. I got some live shows coming up. So next weekend, if you are in Anniston, Alabama, I believe it's the 24th and the 25th, Friday and Saturday, I will be at Happy Hour Comedy Club. So there you go, Alabama. If you guys are out, it's going to be a safe show. So come out and let's have some laughs and see some magic. And like always, abracadamits. Thank you for listening.
Abracadamits.